think for yourself, question everything, set yourself free. Good morning, everybody. You are listening to No New Abnormal. My name is Mark, and today we're going to get into PCR. Now, we've all been told how PCR is the gold standard test for COVID, and thus we've considered that anybody who tests positive is a COVID case or has COVID. But what if I told you that testing positive really doesn't necessarily mean you have COVID at all? To wrap your head around this, you need to understand a little bit about what PCR actually does. PCR, short for polymerase chain reaction, is simply a method to make copies of genetic material like DNA. Now, there's an important distinction to keep in mind here. You can think of DNA as a set of instructions on how to build something. Just as with, say, a recipe for pancakes, you wouldn't conflate the pancake with the recipe itself. Now, I want you to keep that in mind as we learn more about what PCR is actually doing. What's happening is no less ridiculous than if somebody opened up your pancake recipe, pointed at a few of those ingredients, and then proclaimed that you had pancakes. Before I get too deep into jargon and technical nuance, I'd like to just introduce you guys to the late American biochemist, Carey Mullis. He's the guy who actually won a Nobel Prize for inventing PCR. I'm going to play a short clip for you guys here with Carey Mullis, and he's just talking a little bit about how PCR works and how the results of PCR can be misrepresented. So here it is. Give it a listen. See what you think.
How do they misuse PCR to estimate all these supposed free viral RNAs that may or may not be there?
I think misuse PCR is not quite... I don't think you can misuse PCR. No, the results, the interpretation of it. See, if you can say, if they could find this virus in you at all, and with PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in anybody. It starts making you believe in the sort of Buddhist notion that everything is contained in everything else, right? I mean, because if you can amplify one single molecule up to something that you can really measure, which PCR can do, then there's just very few molecules that you don't have at least one single one of them in your body, okay? So that could be thought of as a misuse of it, just to claim that it's meaningful. It is. No, there's very little of what they call HIV, and what's been brought out here by Philpott and Isai already. The measurement for it is not exact at all. It's not as good as our measurement for things like apples. An apple is an apple. You know, you can get something that's kind of like, if you got enough things that look kind of like an apple and you stick them all together, you might think it's an apple. But and HIV is like that. Those tests are all based on things that are invisible, and the results are inferred in a sense. PCR is separate from that. It's just a process that's used to make a whole lot of something out of something. That's what
also,
it is. It doesn't tell you that you're sick, and it doesn't tell you that the thing you ended up with really was going to hurt you or anything like that.
Okay, so that's Carey Mullis. Now, you make up your own mind about it, but I think that was very eye-opening. I feel like were he still around today, he would definitely have something to say about what's going on right now. I'd like to go a little bit more in-depth with you guys by sharing with you a small segment from an excellent write-up on PCR published in the Brownstone Institute. This was written by former scientist, journalist, and BBC producer Ian McNulty. I'll include a link for you guys. So here's the part that I think will be helpful. Investigating the cause of a disease is like investigating the cause of a crime. Just as the detection of a suspect's DNA at a crime scene doesn't prove they committed the crime, so the detection of the DNA of a virus in a patient doesn't prove it caused the disease. Before the invention of PCR, the gold standard for detecting viruses was to grow them in a culture of living cells and count damaged cells using a microscope. The disadvantage of cell cultures is they need highly skilled technicians and can take weeks to complete. The advantage is they only count living viruses that multiply and damage cells. Dead virus fragments that do neither are automatically discounted. The invention of PCR in 1983 was a game changer. Instead of waiting for viruses to grow naturally, PCR rapidly multiplies tiny amounts of DNA exponentially in a series of heating and cooling cycles that can be automated and completed in less than an hour. PCR revolutionized molecular biology, but its most notable application was in genetic fingerprinting, where its ability to magnify even the smallest traces of DNA became a major weapon in the fight against crime. But Like a powerful magnifying glass or zoom lens, if it's powerful enough to find a needle in a haystack, it's powerful enough to make mountains out of molehills. Testing coronavirus particles in a swab is no different to testing apples in a bag. A bag of billiard balls rinsed in apple juice would test positive for apple DNA. But finding apple DNA in a bag does not prove that it contains real apples. Even by the CDC's own admission, in its instructions for use of PCR tests, it says, detection of viral RNA may not indicate the presence of infectious virus or that SARS-CoV-2 is the causative agent for clinical symptoms. Okay, there's a whole lot in there, but hopefully between pancake and apple analogies, things are starting to make some kind of sense. The key takeaway here is, at least for me, when I say a positive test doesn't necessarily mean you've got COVID, it's not just some fringe opinion. It's actually straight out of the government's own instructions. In fact, even the companies that manufacture these tests all say not to use them as the only evidence for clinical diagnosis. Again, I'll provide links for all this stuff for you guys. And to the point of it not being a fringe opinion, here's what a few mainstream sources have to say about it. First, a prominent virologist by the name of Vincent Racaniello. He's a professor of microbiology and immunology at Columbia University. And he says, many laboratories choose to assay the presence of viral genomes by PCR. This is an acceptable technique as long as the limitations are understood. It detects nucleic acids, not infectious virus. Okay, so here he says nucleic acids, and that just refers to the bits of genetic material that we talked about. He's making that same important distinction between the bits of genetic material and the actual virus. This next quote is from a paper published in the prestigious medical journal, The Lancet, and they say, our study shows that despite evidence of prolonged shedding, viable virus appears to be short-lived. Therefore, RNA detection cannot be used to infer infectiousness. So here, they're referring to PCR as RNA detection, and this one really highlights the reason why you can't use PCR in this way, because of that long window of time where you're not actually contagious, but you absolutely will still test positive, even though you're definitely not a danger to anyone. And finally, this one comes from a paper published in Clinical Infectious Diseases over at Oxford, and it says, RT-PCR detects RNA, not infectious virus. Thus, its ability to determine duration of infectivity is limited. Now, after hearing those three examples, you might say, yeah, but I've never heard of these before and the news never told me this. I'm sure our top public health agencies know better than these guys. Well, why don't we check in with the foremost health agency, the World Health Organization? These guys advise more or less every government in the world on these matters. So here's what the WHO's own COVID-19 technical lead, Dr. Maria van Kerkhove, has to say about PCR.
When we look at testing of individuals, we carry out what are called molecular tests or PCR tests. And this indicates evidence of particles of the virus, parts of the virus in an individual. Having somebody test PCR positive doesn't necessarily mean that they are shedding live virus, that they can actually transmit a live virus to someone else, that they're infectious to somebody else.
Okay, so that's the WHO clearly acknowledging the fact that PCR can't tell you whether or not you're contagious. And in addition to what we've already talked about, they say this partly due to something known as the cycle threshold. The idea here is because of how tiny these fragments are, they need to be amplified until there's enough to actually measure. So with each cycle, you have an exponential increase in amplification. The cycle threshold is just the number of cycles that you need in order to get a positive. So why is that important? Because on top of the fact that PCR only ever looks for a fragment, if you run it through too many cycles, you just get a totally bogus result. And so you don't have to take my word for it. Let's hear what the esteemed Dr. Fauci has to say about this.
Right. Again, a good question. And what is now sort of evolving into a bit of a standard that if you get a cycle threshold of 35 or more, that the chances of it being replication competent are minuscule. Mm. So that if somebody, and you know, we have patients, and it's very frustrating for the patients as well as for the physicians. Somebody comes in and they repeat their PCR and it's like 37 cycle threshold, but you almost never can culture virus from a 37 threshold cycle. So I think if somebody does come in with 37, 38, even 36, you got to say, you know, it's just dead nucleotides, period.
So there you have it, guys. I hope you got the gist of that, which was essentially saying if you need to run it past 35 cycles, the results are no go. And you may have noticed some terminology like replication competent and culture of virus. Now, those are crucial concepts to understand within the context of how virologists are said to isolate viruses, which has become a contentious topic ever since some prominent skeptics have been questioning whether or not the virus was isolated. That's obviously a huge can of worms for some other day, so make sure you subscribe and keep an eye out for that. Now, before I wrap this up, I want to share one more thing with you guys, and this is one of many examples of experts being convened to speak on this issue of cycle threshold. So this particular example is from the Canadian province of Manitoba, where the government was being sued. So they brought in a top microbiologist named Dr. Jared Bullard to testify for them in court. Here's a short segment from one of those court hearings. Dr. Bullard testified that determining whether or not a sample is actually infectious needs to be confirmed by lab culture. As noted, only 44% of positive samples at 18 cycles returned viable culture. Samples tested at 25 cycles produced no viable cultures. Manitoba has confirmed that it uses cycle thresholds of up to 40, and in some cases, even 45. This indicates that cases resulting from such tests are almost certainly not infectious. Wow. So in other words, at 25 cycles, they got 100% bogus results. And even with a low cycle threshold of 18, more than half of the results are still bogus, which is completely insane when you consider that most tests seem to be done between 35 and 45 cycles. So for me, the takeaway here is that even if you put aside everything else we've talked about today, this cycle threshold issue alone means that some portion of the numbers are just completely wrong and absolutely shouldn't be counted. While there are some other kinds of tests out there, like the rapid antigen tests, the entire pandemic was essentially built off PCR. And here's the thing, because of the misconception about asymptomatic spread, you've got entire populations of perfectly healthy people that are no danger to anyone getting tested, often repeatedly, and many of them counted as COVID cases. And people who do end up in the hospital for any reason that also happen to test positive are counted as COVID as well, even if that's not why they're there. In fact, depending on the jurisdiction you're looking at, any deaths within up to 60 days of a positive PCR test are counted as COVID deaths, even if they were in the hospital and died for a completely unrelated reason. I hope you're hearing how completely nuts this is. And guys, I'm not making this up. This short clip right here from April 2020 is one of many similar statements from public health officials.
I just want to be clear in terms of the definition of people dying of COVID. So the case definition is very simplistic. It means at the time of death, it was a COVID positive diagnosis. So that means that if you were in hospice and had already been given, you know, a few weeks to live, and then you also were found to have COVID, that would be counted as a COVID death. It means that if technically, if you died of a clear alternate cause, but you had COVID at the same time, it's still listed as a COVID death. So everyone who's listed as a COVID death doesn't mean that that was the cause of the death, but they had COVID at the time of death. I hope that's helpful.
Why, yes, that was helpful, don't you think? That was the director of public health in Illinois, and it's a very similar story basically everywhere. Public officials all over the world have actually been pretty open about the fact that they count the numbers in this outrageous manner. You really can't make this stuff up. So guys, I think I'm going to leave it there for today. I can't thank you enough for spending this time with me. It really means a lot. While we've barely scratched the surface, I hope that what we did cover today, at the very least, has got you thinking a little bit about the fact that maybe, just maybe, we should reconsider this indiscriminate use of PCR. If you appreciate the information in this episode and would like to support what I'm doing here, the best thing you can do is honestly just share it around. Share it with anyone that'll listen. I'm at No New Abnormal on Twitter. And to find all the other ways you can support or follow me, just check out the show notes or head over to nonewabnormal.com. Thanks again, you guys, and see you next time.